And now the second installment of our 2000 Summer Movie Festival this week, robots.
What mission? What are you talking about? I've just about had enough of you. Go that way. You'll be malfunctioning within a day, you nearsighted scrap pile. And don't let me catch you following me, begging for help, because you won't get it.
From the beeps and squeaks of R2-D2 in Star Wars to the smooth operator Gigolo Joe of AI, robots have graced the silver screen from the time of the silence all the way up to this summer's big blockbusters. What's your favorite robot in a movie? And if it's different, your favorite robot movie? Cast your vote. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. You can also send us your nominees on our blog, npr.org/blog of the nation. As always, we're joined by Murray Horowitz, director and COO of the American Film Institute Silver Theater and Cultural Center, which is here in the Washington, D.C. area. Murray, nice to have you back in Studio 3A.
Always good to be back, Neil. Thanks.
And robots, it seems like a pretty clear-cut category, but...
Not until you get into it. What?
Is a computer a robot? Is HAL 2000 a robot?
Well, I consulted an expert for this, and that was my son, Alexander, who, I guess as a parent, you got to be careful if your son knows every robot movie ever made. What does that say about you as a father? I don't know. But I like his definition. It's a new-ish word, by the way. It's less than 100 years old, mm-hmm. and it comes from Carol Hoppeck's play, R.U.R., Rossum's Universal Robots, which is about 1920.
My brother was in a production of that play, so I'm one of the 15 people on the planet who's actually seen it.
You've aced me there.
Yeah.
And well, as you may know then, if there was any kind of note, it's from a Czech word, robota, which means forced labor. So any kind of non-human thing, mechanical thing or automatically functioning thing that is built to perform mechanical functions without any, direct human manipulating it, mm-hmm. human control, that's by me a robot. So yeah, HAL 2000 is a robot.
Is Frankenstein's monster a robot?
Well, interesting that you say that because, yes, because now we have robots with human parts all the time, like RoboCop and all kinds of androids and mm-hmm. semi-biological robots in the movies. But also, don't forget that one of the archetypes for Frankenstein was the golem, this old Yiddish or Jewish folktale, and it's about, it's the golem is clay, but it's animated by its creator to do things on its own.
Murray Horowitz mentioned RoboCop. Here's a clip from that movie. In this scene, the police department unveils its latest addition to its crime-fighting force.
We get the best of both worlds. The fastest reflexes modern technology has to offer, onboard computer-assisted memory, and a lifetime of on-the-street law enforcement programming. It is my great pleasure to present to you RoboCop.
And, of course, one of the ideas of the movie is that the half-human robot battles the fully the fully mechanical robots.
Right, and have a nice day, Neil. But it's true. But the whole idea of man versus machine, man and machine, the relationship between man and machine, you think of John Henry, the Trojan horse for that matter. Our human...
Yeah, it's not that
it's a robot, but the whole human interaction with machines has fascinated us for a long time.
Mm-hmm. So are all robot movies alike? I don't think so.
No. And in fact, there are some comedies. There are some great comedies. We started out with R2-D2 and C-3PO from Star Wars, and the comic antidote to that is Joan Rivers as Dot Matrix in Mel Brooks' Spaceballs. Mm-hmm. There are silent movies, there are westerns, there are lots of animated, Transformers that's out now,
And, that's not a cartoon.
No, it's not a cartoon, although there was an antecedent to that, which was
the animated version of it.
Yeah, the 1984, and by the way, that's one of my favorite, the answer to one of my favorite trivia questions, Neil, which was, what do Orson Welles and Scatman Carruthers have in common? And the answer is their last vocal appearances were in Transformers in 1984. Yeah,
robots in disguise. They also have a long history as sex fantasy objects. Westworld, we remember.
Right.
And, of course, there is the flip on that comedy Fembots, of course. But
right.
Then the male version in AI.
She will make you a real boy, for I will make her a real woman, and all will be right with the world, because you held my hand and saved my brain. so that once again, my customers may ask for me by name, Gigolo Joe. What do you know?
And maybe the king, or is it the queen, of all the sort of robot sex fantasy movies, I would argue the original Stepford Wives, although there's a kind of camp parody version that came out recently. But that's a big part of those robots.
Mm-hmm. Let's go now to David. David's on the line with us from Muncie, Indiana.
Well, I absolutely think that HAL 9000 is the best movie robot, and that 2001 would have to be the best science fiction movie, and that 2010 is seriously underrated.
That's, of course, the sequel to 2001, in which HAL comes back and reprises his role.
Right.
And redeems himself.
Right.
And in fact, that's, I guess, a long story in terms of movie sequels. The evil robot in The Terminator comes back, of course, in Terminator 2 as the hero.
And
come with me if you want to live.
I'm sorry, or that wasn't meant to you, David. You can stay right there.
Yeah, that's T2 Judgment Day, and you know, the evil robot in that one is Robert Patrick as Liquid Metal T-1000, one of the great evil robots, I think, in the movies.
If I may?
Yes?
I just wanted to say that there's also sort of an interesting allusion, which may have been unintentional, in 2010 when Sal, the second addition to the HAL 9000 family, asks if when she's turned off she'll dream, which I thought might have been sort of a sneaky allusion to the replicants and Blade Runner, since that was originally called
Androids Dream of Electric Sheep.
Exactly,
The great Philip K. Dick novel.
And David makes a good point. There really is this grand variety, not only of kinds of characters from, you know, friendly or friendly-ish, my archetype for that is Gort in the Day the Earth Stood Still, to the really evil, nasty, and insidious ones. So they almost have as much of a range in the movies as human characters.
David, thanks very much for the call. And, of course, sometimes they're not just in the movies. Sometimes robots watch the movies.
Crow, listen, you've got to stop.
Oh, hi, Mike. I found the perfect spot. Once I break through this wall, we'll tunnel our way right back to Earth.
Crow, you big dope. You can't tunnel through space.
Come, come, boys. We must confound Jerry at every turn.
Which is going into our next genre, which is, anyway, the escape movie. But anyway.
Well, it's what's great, thank goodness that they made a movie out of Mystery Science Theater 3000 so that we could include Tom Servo and Crow in this, because they are wonderfully entertaining and snide robots. They're great. They're very funny.
There is also, of course, another famous robot which made the trip from television to the silver screen.
For 34 years, I have endeavored to become more human, to grow beyond my original programming. Still, I am unable to grasp such a basic concept as humor. This emotion chip may be the only answer.
And, of course, some people accuse the whole series of movies of lacking the problems with humor. But anyway, that was Data, of course.
Data, the most beloved robot of all, maybe, from Star Trek Generations in 1994. And it's, you know, again, there's the whole relationship between human and machine, just how human can a machine be.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can get, here, by the way, is an email from Kate in Hurley, New Mexico. My favorite robots are the three drones, Huey, Dewey, and Louie, in the movie Silent Running. I always cry at the scene where Dewey stands with his watering can at the gleaming forest pods shoot out into space.
It's great. I mentioned different kinds, you know, the just the idea of robots watering. There are androids who sort of really look like human beings.
Data.
And then there are the HAL 9000s, the ones you sort of don't see. They're these kind of automatic forces. But for people of a certain age, and I count myself in that demographic, we think of mechanical men, you know, like Robbie the robot, whom we've not yet mentioned, in Forbidden Planet, and who hung around the MGM lot long enough to be in all kinds of lesser movies.
And here's an introduction to Robbie if you've never seen Forbidden Planet.
Well, you low-living contraption, I ought to take a can opener to you.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing. Yes, relatively simple alcohol molecules with traces of fusel oil. Would 60 gallons be sufficient?
A robot can get drunk, as we learned in that
Well,
movie.
No, he makes it for the crew members who then proceed to get drunk.
Doesn't he get drunk?
I don't think he gets, but he does, of course, his career devolves into Lost in Space as he returns as Robbie the Robot. Danger, Will. Anyway, I vote, writes Carl in Sacramento, I vote for Forbidden Planet based on Shakespeare's The Tempest. This sci-fi movie is a classic. The robot introduced the idea of personal servant robot, and he looked so cool.
He looks great. He even does a cameo in Gremlins in 1984.
Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This from JC in Louisville, Kentucky.
Hi, Neil. I just want to say I do love the show. Listen to you every day.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I wanted to mention my favorite robot is Johnny Five from the Short Circuit movies.
Mm-hmm.
Watched those as a kid.
And another one of the sort of comic robots.
Yeah, and I think he got drunk somewhere along the way as well.
So. Well, right. You know, making robots subject to human foibles.
Yeah, that kind of made him human after a while, I think. But that was one of my favorites. My friend still does his voice, and he'll crack us up sitting around doing the Johnny Five voice.
Right. JC has a signature line. Isn't Number Five is alive? Number Five is alive. He keeps repeating something.
Johnny Five alive. Yeah.
Right. Johnny Five alive.
Elizabeth in St. Louis sent us an email. Without a doubt, Johnny Five is the best movie robot. A disco dancing robot. What could be better?
Well, you know, you mentioned. Yeah. I'm sorry, JC.
No, go ahead.
You mentioned, Neil mentioned AI, and the thing about Short Circuit is a couple of robot movies have flirted with the Pinocchio thing of, mm-hmm. you know, the mechanical person who wants to be a real person, and that's part of his whole shtick.
And he realizes how hard it is to be a human and a robot at the same time.
And it's a tough job. thanks very much for the call.
Thank you, sir.
We're talking robots today on our summer movie festival with Murray Horwitz of the American Film Institute's Silver Theater and Cultural Center here in the Washington, D.C. area. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's Lauren in Pullman, Washington, who emails us. My vote for favorite robot is Lisa from the 1985 John Hughes film Weird Science. She was the funniest geek dream ever.
That's going some, too. That's quite a statement.
I would think so. Let's see if we can go now to, this is Corey, excuse me, Corey in Minneapolis.
Yes, I have kind of a controversial pick here. I'd like to pick Blade Runner as the movie, but there's a specific philosophical leaning as to the question as to whether or not Harrison Ford is actually human or whether he is a robot in that movie. And I've always leaned more towards the he's a robot that thought he was human. The whole movie itself was just full of philosophical conundrums based around that very concept of what defines a human, what defines humanity. And I guess I'll take the rest of it off the air.
Okay, Corey, thanks.
Thanks a lot, Corey. I guess I could say I'm glad you brought it up because we sort of wrestled with this one ourselves. This is Ridley Scott's Blade Runner from 1982, and there are all these genetically engineered biological androids, the replicants. And indeed, it is a question of, you know, which is Harrison Ford? What is he? And our solution to the problem was not to mention it, so I'm very, very grateful to you for bringing it up. Thanks, Corey.
Well, clearly, one of the ways you can tell the difference between a human and a replicant is how long they live.
You were made as well as we could make you.
But not to last.
The light that burns twice as bright burns half as long. And you have burned so very, very brightly, Roy. Look at you. You're the prodigal son.
And, of course, that's Rutger Hauer in the role of the chief replicant there.
Right. And Corey's right about the philosophical thing because the replicants are really evil in this movie. So all kinds of questions that Harrison Ford asks himself and we ask ourselves.
Mm-hmm. His agent, I think, would argue for human. But we'll move on from there. Anyway, let's go on to Matt. Matt's with us from Oakland.
Hi, Neil. Thanks very much for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to put a plug in for Metropolis. And forgive me, but I haven't seen the movie since I was in college, and I just remember that movie set the tone for me for every other robot movie or sci-fi movie that I've ever seen.
And I have to complain, of course, we don't have a sound clip from Metropolis.
That would be difficult, but it just was a great envisioning of what science, you know, or what we would be able to achieve, you know, in the future, all the way back in the 20s. It's just a wonderful, wonderful film, and I think deserves a top spot.
Well, I'm with you, Matt. I really am. And in a way, you've stolen my thunder because Neil always, and it can't be an ambush anymore, but he attacks me at the end of these visits like, so what's your favorite? And really, Maria the robot in Fritz Lang's Metropolis from 1927 is my favorite. There are some great scores that people have written to Metropolis, but I don't think they'd be instantly recognizable on the air. But she really is, if you've seen that poster, if you're, I don't know what your college career was like, but you very well may have had some poster of the robot from Metropolis up in your room. A lot of people did, and it really is everything that you said. It's an icon of the genre.
It absolutely started it off for me.
Hmm. Matt, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you, Neil. Have a good day.
Bye-bye. And let's see if we can get one last caller on the line, and this is Chris. Chris with us from South Carolina.
Hi there. I was going to say my favorite robot, though more literally he does have a movie, is the robot from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the rather more sarcastic robot. It's probably the funniest thing throughout the entire book, and... So he is my favorite.
Marvin the robot.
Yes, exactly.
And of course, his origin is not from the book. It's from a radio show, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Right, you are.
Very true.
All right. Thanks very much, Chris.
Thank you.
And Murray, thanks very much to you.
Thank you. Thanks a million, Neil.
Next week, Talk of the Nation will be in Detroit on Thursday. The week after that, I'm going to be on vacation. So we're going to be on hiatus. We'll see you again in 3 weeks. Our movie festival then will focus on Best Pop Star Biopic, La Bamba. If you have a nominee, you can walk the line and send us an email, talk@npr.org. Murray Horowitz is director and COO of the American Film Institute Silver Theater and Cultural Center here in the Washington, D.C. area. We also need to thank Maria Insua, who helped Murray out this week. He'd be nothing without her. See you in 3 weeks. Tomorrow, Joe Palca is here with Science Friday. I'll be back a week from today in our special broadcast from Detroit. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.